Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host Eddie Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk. Welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New ones every Thursday, anywhere you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss an episode. And remember, as I tell you every week, everything you hear on the podcast as far as the interviews originated on my Sirius XM radio show, which is called Trunk Nation and heard live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific on Faction Talk Sirius XM Channel 103. Or you can listen anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. So if you can't listen in the live window, just hit me up on the app, listen to full shows, interviews, anything you want there. If you only listen to this podcast and you don't join me on Sirius XM, you're only getting a tiny, tiny taste of what I do on the radio every day. So if you'd like to try a free trial subscription, no risk in that. Just go to SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk. No credit card required. You'll get 3 months free to hear the entire program. If you listen in the live window, be able to interact and get involved with us. Definitely check it out and come on board if you're in the U.S. or Canada for the Daily Show, Trunk Nation, again, on Faction Talk 103 on Sirius XM. Here on the podcast, just a little taste of what I do there to bring to you once a week free to the world. So this week, an extra large podcast because we've got two interviews for you. We start with Brett Michaels, who called into my show a couple weeks ago. Brett has been working and teasing this whole Party Gras concept for the last couple years, which is continuing into this summer. Brett was going to join me at an event called Rock Island the day after we did this interview. I was actually already in Key West, Florida, where the event happens. Brett called in. He was performing the next day, as you'll hear in the conversation. So I was in my trailer backstage, and Brett gave me a call. And we talked about a bunch of different things, including some football, which we now know some of the results of that, because, again, this interview happened a couple weeks ago. So keep that in mind. But Brett is rolling out a lot more of these Party Gras dates. We'll be hearing from him again soon. Always fun to talk to him. We'll lead with him. And then second, also from Rock Island, we'll have Paul Taylor, keyboardist and guitarist from the band Winger. Always love talking to these guys you don't hear from all that much. And Paul Taylor's a very talented guy. was very involved in the making of the new coming Mick Mars solo album, which we talk about with him as well. So you'll get some great insights and some great conversation with Paul Taylor, multi-instrumentalist with the band Winger, and that is the second interview on the podcast. But let's get started with Brett. Enjoy. What's happening, my brother?
Awesome, Eddie, my friend. How are you down in warm, warm Key West right now?
It is a scorcher. And remember that trailer a couple years ago that you and I shared that was here backstage?
I can never forget it.
I am in that exact trailer. And when I opened the door to come into it yesterday for the first time, it smelled like somebody died in here in the 2 years since we used it.
You know what? Go ahead.
I'm going to do you a favor in case you need it tomorrow. I'm going to go to the CVS. I'm going to buy a little Febreze and I'm going to spray it down for you so it smells nice and fresh for you tomorrow if you need to use it.
My brother, you could not do anything kinder than that. We're going to Febreze it up. We're going to split that sucker right down the middle, you and me, and we're going to make a party out of that thing. I thought you were going to
party gras.
It smells like a party wagon in here.
Party gras in a tiny RV in a little parking lot behind the stage at Rock Island. Sounds like a plan, man. So listen, I know, unfortunately, you know, you couldn't come on live tomorrow because you're not going to be here in the hours that I'm on the air, which I totally get. So I appreciate you taking some time to call in. And for those that are coming to see you tomorrow here at Rock Island in Key West, what do you have planned? Because I know you got some great special guests with you.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, let me just say this. It was one of my absolute favorite shows. The last time we were down there was incredible. Everyone just in a good mood. And that's what the Party Girl is. I know you know that. We've been friends forever. But that's what we're bringing. I call it all killer hits, no filler. And just bringing a bunch of great friends with me. We're going to get up there and just the whole day. A lot of great bands, and then we're going to have people join me on stage, D and Lou, and it's just every hit you can think of it's just going to be an awesome night.
You know, last night, this was closed out by a band that you had with you on the Party Gras tour, and that was Night Ranger. They closed the show here last night, and they brought the house down and turned in a great set as well. So, in a way, there's a lot of elements to the Party Gras tour last year here at Rock Island, because also on the bill with you tomorrow is Jefferson Starship, who you had out.
Absolutely. So, let me just say this. A lot of people last year, when they came out, I said, look, this is about the music. It's about friendship, the bands. That's the way I've tried to make it throughout my entire career. And that vibe coming down to Rock Island, again, Starship, unbelievable. Everyone comes up at the end of the night. We all sing a song together. And Night Ranger, I could truly say this, band and crew, my best friends. We had the best tour together. I've never seen them never give 1,000% on stage. Starship the same way, playing their hits. And it's just going to be one of those nights where it's song after song after song is a hit. And then at the end of the night, we bring everyone up. And you know how this goes. We always grab a couple fans out of the audience and bring them up with us. And we're just going to make a great party out of it.
You know, you have with you now for at least this show tomorrow, you've got two different special guests than what you had out last summer. And those being Dee Snider. And I just saw Dee do this, go up and do a special guest slot actually with Jack Russell at an event we were at in Cancun a month or two ago. And he gets up and he does his three songs. And, you know, Dee is just an amazing front man as well and comes out and does a great job. And then also tomorrow, you've got, to me, one of the great voices in rock history in Lou Gramm, who I'm sure is going to come out and do some of the Foreigner stuff, right?
1,000,000%. And Lou, every one of them in different formats. As I try to tell people, the Party Gras brings different people at different times. You never know quite who the guest is going to be. I know we're getting ready to announce the 2024, but this is the kickoff of it. And we did this together last year, and you brought me a lot of great luck and a lot of incredible fans. And this is what we're doing. Lou Gramm, first of all, one of the nicest guys, he sounds as great as ever, and he belts out the Foreigner hits. Dee, I want to say this, we're born on the same day, March 15th, the Ides of March. Truly one of my great friends, and he just comes up there, and his energy level is unstoppable. We match each other on the energy, and it brings the house down. And at the end of the night, we all come up together, but doing those Foreigner hits and Starship on this, and it's going to be awesome. I was hoping Night Ranger would be there again or still in town, but I unfortunately think they are not. We're going to hope that they are, but it's just going to bring the house down for real, and making sure that the fans, that's what matters to me. Them having a great time makes me have a great time.
Well, yeah, you can see that. Anybody that's seen you play with, you know, whether it's your own thing or Poison, of course, always talks about that. You know, going back to Lou Gramm for a second, and look, I've known D forever, and he's a powerhouse, and he still is. I told D when I saw him the other day, I said, you know, he doesn't want to do full-time shows anymore. I'm like, I don't know why. You're still as good as you've ever been, and if you want to change on that and do Twisted, you could easily do it again because he's still in tremendous shape and still sings vocally and great and comes out there and is all over the stage. But Lou is an interesting story. I spent a lot of time talking to Lou in a couple really in-depth interviews, and he's very candid and very open about all the struggles and stuff he's gone through. And I got to tell you, Brett, and I'm sure you think this as well, knowing everything that Lou has endured in terms of his medical stuff and all, I was like, man, you know, he's not going to be able to sing that stuff anymore. I've seen him twice in the last year. Vocally, it's amazing how good he still is.
He belts it out. So here, I'm going to go even more in depth with that. Besides Lou being a super, super nice guy, right? And me and him just got to talk, hang out. We got off this big cruise thing we did together. We walked the whole way out, out to the vehicles that were waiting, talking about life. But the other thing, that knowing what he's been through physically, not just emotionally, physically with everything, but I told him over and over, you sound as good now as you've ever sounded. You belt it out. You give everything you got. But here's the thing. You were the sound a Foreigner of some of the greatest rock songs written. And I said, for us to be able to go up there with the Brett Michaels band and my music director, Pete Evick, and rock these, and we've done this a couple times where my band is his band, and our band belts it out, and Lou, we all look at each other like, it sounds as good, if not better, than ever, and yet we're playing some of the greatest rock songs played on radio.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm curious for you as a singer, like, again, I'm not a musician, I'm not a singer, but even now when I hear Foreigner songs come on the radio, whether I'm in a supermarket or a club or wherever I may be, that's the thing that jumps out to me, that vocal. I mean, his vocal on the stuff he recorded is just, again, I don't know how you feel, but I truly feel it's some of the greatest rock vocals ever recorded. When you growing up, because of course he predates you a little bit, did Foreigner and Lou's voice have an influence on you in terms of wanting to be a singer and frontman yourself?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. The one thing, Eddie, that me and you talk about on or off the air is that everything that I've listened to, grew up with, I'm one of those guys that is grateful. It inspired me. And Lou's vocals, you know, again, the sound of his voice is unique. There's no place you can go that you don't hear that and go, oh, that's Lou. Meaning you go, that's Foreigner. And you listen to some of the greatest, again, when I go back to great rock songs, I mean, Hot Blooded, Double Vision, I can go on and on and on, right? But these are really songs that inspired me, and I've told him that. I said, you're an inspiration. You don't realize that keeps passing the torch on, and that's what you hope to do when you're doing this, and that's where Party Grawl was born. And I'm going back to the start of Poison. We would go play shows when every other band was turning stuff down. We're like, nope, let's go play with Armored Saint down at Pomona Valley Auditorium. Let's put Lynyrd Skynyrd on this show with us. Just let people get exposed to great music, and it just brings a lot of genres together.
Yeah, no doubt. So I got to ask you this. Obviously, you're coming here to Key West tomorrow, and you'll you'll headline day number three here of Rock Island. But you know, going out with this Party Gras concept, which you did last summer, and I saw the show in New Jersey. You had Night Ranger, you had Starship. At those dates, you had Mark McGrath come out, you had Steve Augieri come out. So you're obviously evolving it and changing it, and it seemed to do very well. You seemed very happy with the response. The fans seemed to love it last summer. So is it going to be, and I know you wanted to build it to an ongoing summer thing, is it going to be something you're going to do again this summer and you're going to want to go out and do on a recurring basis?
Yeah, and it's the Party Gras is the name of a feel. It's the vibe of what we do. It changes with different artists. We're starting it technically, even though it's Rock Island, it's the tomorrow night is the kickoff of the Party Gras. It's a lot of the artists that will be on with me in different things. So, you know, sometimes you're with individual promoters, then you're with Live Nation for a bunch of amphitheaters, AEG for a bunch of amphitheaters. There's different promoters, and we change it up in each of the markets, you know. And one of the things about this year, we just launched this thing with CMT Crossroads. And it was my friend Chris Jansen who's got – we play this at our shows when people are walking in. But you'll hear rock, pop, country, blues. You hear all kinds of different music as it's walk in and walk out. And this year we're going to make it incredible. We got Don Felder on. He's unbelievable.
He's here now.
Yeah, Don
Felder's here right now. I just watched him soundcheck. Yeah, he's amazing.
It's the best. And he, I mean, wrote and was in one of the – is greatest bands ever. I mean, the Eagles, come on. So we've got there. We'll take the position of what Starship did last year. And then we got Chris Jansen with Buy Me a Boat, Fix a Drink. If anyone of your listeners has a chance to watch the Bret Michaels, Chris Jansen, CMT Crossroads, where we wail, four of his big hits, four of my big hits, we do it together. It's this party vibe you can't. It was a game changer for CMT. And then all of a sudden you've got this, you mix that up, and then on stage D's coming out with me. Chris will come back out. We've got a mystery guest that's going to be joining us who I'm going to say is a true friend from the beginning till now, and we're going to announce that a little closer to the Live Nation events. And Don Felder, it's going to be – think of the night of hits we've got from the Eagles – to Poison, to Twisted Sister, to Chris Jansen with Buy Me a Boat and Fix a Drink. I mean, these are, you look these up and it's got umpteen zillion views and it's just a good vibe. And then we're putting another guest on there as well.
So it sounds like there's going to be a lot and you're going to vary it and change it up and you're going to keep it fresh. And again, the bottom line is, and I know knowing you so well and how well you do it, it keeping it fun and keeping it loose and just making it a party, because that's how you roll. I think it's interesting, Brett. It sounds like you're going to mix in a little country flavor into this. Are you personally a big country music fan? Was that an influence on you as well growing up?
It is, and it was, and it is. But it's the sound. Like if you listen to what country's evolved into, a lot of it carries a lot of the rock that we grew up in our genre playing.
Sure.
And lot of those artists, whether it was Kenny Chesney and Tim McGraw and I went up and did Every Rose Has Its Thorn together at the stadium, and then Poison played there the next night. And I think all those boundaries, and I mean this, because of people like yourself, myself, we broke down a lot of those boundaries and walls that were up that allow people to listen, to have a shuffle on their playlist. And I think if people come out and they hear hits, that's what they want to do. If I go to a concert, I want to hear maybe a new song or two. But honestly, I want to go there and have a great time. I want to be able to sing along, drink a beer, and have a great time. And that's all I can bring to the table is that energy and big hit music for people to enjoy. And that's what's going to happen tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's happened, too, is the way people get music now. When you and I were growing up, of course, you couldn't listen to a record before you bought it. You had to make that investment of 8, 10, 15 bucks, whatever it is, to buy an album, and that was it. Now, of course, you know, there's pros and cons to the music industry now, but now, of course, any kid could click on anything in 2 seconds on their phone and hear it without paying per play. And with that, I think it's opened up a lot more diversity among people listening, where if you were in a rock lane or a country lane or a hip hop lane or whatever it was, now because it's so easy to listen to other stuff, it seems to me like a lot more people are being exposed to it and maybe a little more open to it.
Absolutely. 1,000,000%. And here's the thing, before I go back in the day, I'm just using an example. My daughters, Rain Elizabeth and Georgia Blue, they listen to everything, but their big party songs, when they're throwing a party at the house or having a good time with their friends or at college, they're listening, again, AC/DC, GNR, Poison. You know, those are the songs where they all start acting crazy and having fun, and it makes me feel good. But they mix it in with listening to everything, country, pop, R&B. They're listening to hip-hop. But it all, it's broke down those walls. But for us, I had to listen to, bear with me, a little piece of a song get played, and then you were investing in an album. So if you were going to buy the first Van Halen record, you got a little piece of a song, and then you prayed that the rest of that album that I went and bought had some great songs, and they did. But that's the way now. You can just pop it up and listen, and it gives you a little taste. But it also gives us what I think the music industry, it keeps evolving. I think it's allowed us to also break down a bunch of barriers and give people a lot of diversity and let them decide what they like and don't like.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm curious, what was the first record you ever bought as a kid that you remember buying with your own money?
I do. I remember it ridiculously well. So it was a garage sale. It's still one of my best friend Billy Jones's house, and they were selling Led Zeppelin 2 at a garage sale. This is no lie. And I believe it was Leonard Skinner Pronounced. That was the name of the record. And those were the first two. And then I, after that, went to the Sears record collection, where I bought one and borrowed one. And that happened to be Kiss and Van Halen.
Which
I
Kiss
paid
record?
For one, and then the other one, I don't know how it made it under my leather jacket. I'm not saying it was right or wrong, allegedly, but it made its way out the door, and then I felt bad later, and when I had a little scratch, I could put together some money. I literally went back and paid them because I felt morally obligated to do it.
How about the record clubs? Were you ever in the record clubs? Remember you used to send a penny and you get like 8 records or something in the back of a magazine? Did you ever do those?
Yes, yes, and yes. Let me do this. Yeah. And then you could get 11 albums, 11 for a penny, but then I never bothered to read the fine print underneath.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot to read that. I didn't think it through. I've gotten smarter since then. But those record clubs were the best, and when they showed up, that was Christmas all over again. But let me say, one of my biggest days of my life, if you go back through my old interviews, when Poison's Look What the Cat Dragged In made it to the Columbia House Record and Tape, right?
Right.
That literally, I'm not making it up, when I saw it on there, I've never been so excited in my life. I said, that's it. We hit the big time.
And by the way, that small print... I know, but that small print, I remember it clearly what it said. You must buy whatever the amount of additional records was, but here was the big line that you wanted to ignore. At regular club prices, which were like $20 an album.
You just said it. I forgot to read at regular and or exaggerated club prices.
Right. That was the part
that... It almost put me under.
Right. That was the part that we all wanted to ignore as kids. Regular club prices. You just wanted those 11 records to show up one day, and then, like, you know, oh, wait, I'm on the hook, you know, and that's when it turned bad, and you had to go to your parents and say, you got to buy me 8 more records at $20 a pop.
My dad, I said, Dad, what do you know? He goes, did you read this part at the bottom? I go, no. I said, they're just giving me everything for a penny. He goes, no, you got to read. Because he knew he was going to be the one holding the bag for it. But he did.
Right.
He made me. I worked. I did some lawnmower and snow shoveling to work through the rest of those at club pricing.
Hey, man, before I let you go.
For you. I got one more kicker.
What's that?
Before I tell you, I can't wait to see you tomorrow, and we're going to rock. And we're going to – this year we're going to accommodate sharing the Febreze trailer, all right?
Yes.
But before that, I want to give you my first true listening on my close and play record player.
I had one, too.
I used scissors and off the back of my cereal box cut my first record out of the Partridge Family. I had to cut the album. It was on the back of the actual cereal box. I beg people to look this up.
Oh, the Flexi. They were called Flexi discs. Sure, I had them, too. They were in magazines, too. Yeah.
In magazines, and my first one was cutting it off the back of the cereal box. you know, and eating all that cereal to get that record may have caused me to get the diabetes, but I was going to enjoy that damn record no matter what.
Hey, I can't let you go without asking you if there's anything, you know, going on with Poison, and if you have any plans with Poison anywhere in the near future. People still buzzing about how great you were on the stadium tour. Do you have any plans to reconvene with those guys?
100%, and I look forward to it, and we're going to have that big discussion. You know, we always get with you, and you're our first big discussion, and that I'm saying 100% in the, let me say this, not near but not too distant future. How's that sound?
Well, that's going to make Poison fans very happy to hear. That's awesome. And lastly, I can't let you go without offering you condolences on your Steelers. I texted you before the game. They put up a good fight. It was nice that they, unlike my Giants, at least they made it in to the playoffs. But now that they're out, what's your prediction? What team wins it all this year in football?
Man, that's tough. So first of all, you're asking me, I'm still emotionally wounded. I don't cry, but I do get emotional sweat in my eyes when the Steelers lose. I shed a little emotional sweat, but I'm going to tell you something. So if I was to say, you know, we all would like to see that matchup. If it goes down to a division between the Lions, go with me, the Lions and Detroit. Detroit, listen, they've been waiting for this a long time. I don't know if you watched that game.
I did.
My buddy is Sean McVay. He's a coach of the Rams, and he's an unbelievably great coach, for real. But that was Super Bowl style football coming down to 1 point. I was watching grown men. It may have been some of my road crew bawling in that stadium when the Lions won that game. So they call Motor City MCDC. Motor City Dan Campbell's doing a great job. But Baker and Tampa look good. I mean, San Fran, you've got a lot going on. My two
Baltimore
teams, the Steelers and the Eagles are out. I'm bummed as a Pennsylvanian. But I'm also saying the Ravens are tough on our side in our division. And Kansas City, the Bills. I mean, you got a lot of great teams going up.
Yeah, now it gets real.
Now it comes down to, again, who wants it the most, but maybe the Bills and the Lions, both blue collar, near each other. That could be an insane Super Bowl.
That would be pretty cool to see. Those fan bases are definitely dying for that, and I was happy. Dan Campbell's a former player for the Giants, so I was happy to see him win as well with the Lions the other day for their fans. So I was kind of pulling for that.
Me too. He's a good dude. And, again, it's tough because a lot of the players now and the coaches are friends of mine. They all know the first thing is Steelers, then I also the Eagles because they're my other Pennsylvania team, and they weren't the same, obviously, AFC and NFC. But so it made it easy to do it. But I'm telling you, this year is going to be crazy, and it's in Vegas, which is insane. That's going to be a party to begin with, correct? If I'm not mistaken, the Super Bowl's in Vegas.
Yes, it is. And I have a second home there, so I'm going to be there Super Bowl week, and I can't wait because that town, as you know, is party central anyway. So add in the biggest sporting event in the world, and it's going to be nuts that entire week.
You think? You're going to be the king of Vegas, baby.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be all about me, Brett.
No, we're going to put you on a float, and I'm going to drive you around. I'm going to put you on a float and drive you around.
That's just what everybody wants to see Super Bowl weekend in Vegas is is me do. on a float. Right. Exactly. Yep, yeah. We'll get right to that.
You can't wear that thong you have on right now, though, that you're wearing in Key West. We're going to get you a football outfit.
Damn, you busted me, man. I was out on the beach just rocking that thing, and you saw that son of a bitch. Nothing gets by you, buddy.
We divert it. We were about to land, and we saw you out there and divert it.
Right. Who's that big chooch on the beach in a thong? Hey, listen, always good to talk to you.
Shirt on.
Exactly. That I understand. I would understand people be offended by that for sure. Listen.
We love you. You're our superhero.
Always good to talk to you, my friend. We'll see you here in Key West. I'll keep the trailer nice and fresh for you. And Brett will be headlining Rock Island with a bunch of great guests we just talked about here in Key West tomorrow. And then you know the drill. Go to Brett's socials. Keep up with everything he's got going on. A lot of Party Gras action in 2024. And sounds like some Poison action sooner than later as well. So all good stuff. Travel safe, and I'll see you when you get here.
I love you, my friend. Thanks for you, for real, all the great years. We're all fans of you, and I'm driving you around that damn float. Damn it. Breathe that trailer. Breathe it.
I'll take you up on that. I'll talk to you soon, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thanks to Brett. He's already announced more Party Gras dates since that interview, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from him again on the radio show very, very soon.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Next up, Paul Taylor from Winger. Paul dropped by my broadcast position at Rock Island a couple weeks ago. Here's how that conversation went. Good to see you, man.
Hey, thanks, Eddie. Hey, everybody.
And, I always wanted to talk to you for a little bit because we always run into each other, whether it's on the cruises or events like this or whatever. And it's a quick hello or whatever, but rarely do we get a chance to actually talk a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always been such a fan of your work and the bands that you've been a part of and what your contributions were to those bands. And we'll talk Winger and some of the other stuff. But, you know, I had Mick Mars on this show.
Yeah.
And he let me world premiere his song. And, it's funny because Mick is a man of his word because he told me about 10 years ago.
And he was telling me while we were writing the record all along, he mentioned it numerous times, like, yeah, Eddie's going to be the first guy.
Yeah.
And he stuck to his word. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he followed through on that and he texted me. He's like, I'm finally ready. And there were a couple times where he said he was ready and then it didn't happen.
Trust me. Yeah, we were kind of getting ready to start giving up on it. I was like, man, I don't know if he's ever going to let this thing go. But he finally did and was super happy.
I was wondering about that too because I thought maybe there was like, I thought he was going to bail on the whole thing. Because it had been so many start stops.
Well, and sometimes the problem with sitting on something for a long time is then all of a sudden it starts to be old news in your brain and you're just like, I'm sick of this thing. Not realizing, hey, man, nobody else has even heard this. So,
yeah.
He all of a sudden one day he just sent me this text and it's like, hey, coming out Halloween and just. Yeah, it all came down quick once he pulled the trigger on it. So
tell me about your, because there's been a lot of people that have been affiliated with that record, and now we've got two songs out. Loyal to the Lie is what I premiered, and I think the other track, Right Side or Wrong.
Yeah.
So there's two tracks out, the full record coming, I think, in a month or so. But tell me about your history with it, because there were a lot of different people involved in this record coming and going and whatever. When did you jump in? Were you there from day one?
No. And I just kept hearing rumblings in town, you know, and different people. Yeah, like you say, I knew different people were working on it. But one day, Michael Wagner just called me out of the blue and just said, hey, let's grab lunch. And I said, sure. And he said, hey, you know, we've got a bunch of songs written. He goes, I'm working on the Mick thing. And I didn't know he was part of that. So he had jumped in somewhere along the line. And so he just said, hey, can you help us write lyrics for all these songs? And I said, sure, you know. So he took me up to meet Mick. And, you know, actually the first thing I asked him is like, you know, what's he like as a guy? I mean,
so you didn't know him?
No. I'd never, never had met him. And so we sat, we talked for like 6 hours, and finally I said, hey, I would love to do this. You know, I said, why don't you just throw me two ideas? I already know which ones that you played me, and, you know, let me do what I do to them, and then I'll give them back, and you do, you know, take it the next thing. So, you know, I lucked out. I mean, the first song I wrote with him, which it's called Alone, and it's kind of funny. All it was is this little piano part that he had written, and he had numbers on the piano key, and he did them all separate. And so I'm like, I'm going to take that and turn it. And it turned out it's kind of almost like a Foreigner sounding song. But anyway, we just blasted that one out, and that was just so I could kind of show him what I did and see if it gelled and if he even liked, you know. And I just told him, look, you're not going to hurt my feelings if you hate what I do, you know, but let's give it a shot. So yeah, it turned out good.
So when you say he threw you some ideas, what were they, fully done songs except for lyrics, or
pretty much? But then, you know, being as that Mick doesn't write lyrics much or melodies a lot, you know, he's mostly the music and guitar, and man, talk about full of ideas. Every day he plays me new stuff and all these sound effects and he does stuff with a guitar that's, you know, I'm like, you know, sometimes it'll sound like a mandolin or a string section. I mean, so he gave me plenty of things, but they had like 9 solidified, pretty much recorded things. But when I went to kind of try and write a song over it, you know, they had to be kind of reconfigured, which, you know, he agreed as we got into them. I'm like, see what's happening here. This one goes to a verse, and then there's this big section, and we need to get to the chorus somehow, you know. So we just started working together and kind of rearranging them and changing stuff around. And so it was very, a lot, I don't know. We just hit it off. You know, we kind of heard things the same. And
as a songwriter, and is that a challenging thing for you to jump in at something?
It can be.
I would think where a good part of it's done already, but then you've got to not only interject your thing and do what's needed, but you may have to reconfigure some stuff. And that I would think would be a tricky balancing act.
It could. And it was a couple songs that gave me a run for the money. And I should mention as well, right off the bat, I just told him, hey, look, I can write lyrics and help out, but if I try and sing you what I'm writing, you're going to hate it. It's because I can't sing very well. I can sing backup. So I suggested bringing Jacob Bunton, because me and Jacob have written a lot of stuff for TV together. And we were just totally compatible writers. So, and then I thought, wow, then I'll have a built-in voice. And, you know, and the three of us, I thought, would be very, you know, compatible. And it turned out to be that, you know. So we all got just going on each one. We'd get up to a new song and we'd talk about it, and we'd sit with Mick, and we'd go, okay, switch that to over here and change that and shorten this, and then me and Jacob would go and write some lyrics and then bring them to Mick, and he'd go, I don't like that, and we'd change them. And so yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What year did you get involved? Did you jump in on this?
I think it was 2018. So it's been a long haul. It might have been 19, but you know.
So roughly 3-4 years.
Yeah.
The reason I ask that is because Mick's record, again, the gestation period for this thing goes back easily 10 years. And yeah. I know that he had different producers involved. I know Karabi was in there for a while working with them. All these different people I was hearing coming and going. Like 5 years ago, he put stuff on YouTube. I remember that was the first time he contacted me. He goes, putting these t-shirts out, I'm ready to go. And I think that was different stuff than ultimately came out.
It was.
So, so there's also, like, I would imagine beyond just trying to come in and do what you do as a writer, you also have to kind of, like, he probably went through a whole navigation process as to what's the record actually going to be.
Well, I think that's why it took a long time. I think he was just trying to find who he was as a solo guy, you know. And sometimes, you know, you start writing something, oh, that's pretty good, and then you write a few more things and go, okay, maybe that first stuff wasn't so good. And, you can be chasing your tail for a while sometimes. And but, I mean, he's really prolific. He pumps out ideas all the time. So, you know, it was like, in a way, it was like a kid in a candy store for me, because he had tons of great parts. And some of the songs were as is. They were perfect, you know. And we just kind of worked on the lyrics together. But, yeah.
It's really, and he said that to me. Mick said that to me. He said at one point, he goes, Ed, he goes, one of the problems I'm having, he goes, I've never done anything outside of Motley Crue.
Yeah.
He goes, even, you know, whether it's management, label, setting up publishing, whatever it is, all these things I've got to do, agents, everything. He goes, I've just been under that umbrella. So I think that for him, just trying to become a solo artist after all those decades in Motley, you'd think a guy like that would know all the ins and outs, but it's different animal when you're out there on your own.
And at the time he was writing a lot of this stuff, he didn't know who was going to be singing it. So, and that's always kind of a, you never know, and that's, you know, but he did tell me, he's like, man, I really would love to have a guy that kind of sounds like David Bowie, has like a lower kind of Bowie-ish voice. I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, I want something different. And I had remembered a song that Jacob, I had went to a video shoot right after I had met him on a cruise one time. I went to his band Lynam's video shoot for a song called Cold. And in the verses, he's got this, I mean, he has a beautiful low end to his voice when he's singing. So that's what immediately brought Jacob to mind. And as, you know, he's an amazing writer as well. But sometimes it's weird. Sometimes it all just falls together and everybody just gels. And we had a lot of fun doing it. And, you know.
So how much did you write on the record? Do you have co-writes on everything? Or?
Everything but the last song, which is an instrumental.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's an old kind of, I don't even know what style. It's almost like, I don't know. It's got, it's shuffly blues kind of thing. It's guitar. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Are you, you only wrote or did you play on it as well?
Yeah, I played.
You played?
Yeah, I played on
keys,
all
guitar.
The,
what'd you do?
All the keys. Yeah.
Keys.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by the record? I'm surprised you didn't know Mick previous, because you being in Winger since day one, him and Motley, I would think your paths would have crossed.
Yeah, we just,
which is strange.
Yeah, I never crossed paths with him, but and you know he doesn't get out a lot either.
Right.
So unless we were on tour together, you know he likes to stay home more than be out. So I didn't run into him anywhere.
Were you surprised at the direction that he was taking with the record? There were a lot of people that assumed Mick Mars, solo record, older blues guitar-based guy, he's going to make a bluesy kind of like retro record.
Well, that's the rumors I was hearing around town. He was making a bluesy thing. And when they started playing me some of the idea, I was like, holy crap, this is not blues at all.
Yeah.
You know, so it was fun, man. I totally loved it.
Yeah, no, it's a killer record. I've heard the whole record. I'm looking forward to everybody getting to hear it. Again, there's two tracks out now from it.
Yeah, and some of the stuff I think will be surprising to people, like Undone or Killing Breed. I know Mick just loves Killing Breed. And,
heavy.
Me and Mick just wrote that one together. And, it's just real, it's almost cinematic, you know, and that Undone as well, you know.
Yeah.
Big arrangements on those songs. And then there's, of course, the heavier stuff and... So, yeah, it's a nice variety, I think, you know.
You mentioned Jacob Bunton, who sings a lot on that record and contributed to it as well. Jacob's a friend as well, and mega-talented guy.
Mega-talented.
And I don't think people, much like you, you know, there's these guys that are kind of like these behind-the-scenes guys that do all this stuff that you may not know or be aware of as a, you know, as a fan. They see you, oh, Paul Taylor, the keyboard player and winger, you know. That you guys have all these other things you do, whether it's writing, whether it's producing. You mentioned TV music a second ago.
I've written a ton of that. Yeah.
So tell the audience, if you will, who know you as, you know, Paul Taylor, the dude from Winger, of some of these other things you do. We just talked about writing for Mick, but you do a lot of that kind of work, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, over the years, you know, I wrote a record with Steve Perry from Journey, for Love of Strange Medicine record. I wrote the whole thing with him, except for two songs. I toured with Alice Cooper on and off for 13 years, which is where I met Kip.
I think everybody in Winger was an Alice at one point.
Yeah, well, we were. Yeah, everybody at Rod. And let's see, what else? I played with Nick Gilder for a short period of time, Al DeNova, of course, and just, you know, and then we were talking earlier, Skid Row. I wrote The Gang's All Here with Snake and Rach.
Tell me about that, because Rachel was living in Nashville. You live in Nashville,
yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So Rachel was living there. I know he just moved back to Jersey. He told me he just left Nashville. But how did you get tied in with Skid Row? Did you guys have a history or?
You know, when he moved to town, we just me and him and Ryan Cook just started hanging, and you know, it would just go out to dinners and stuff, and you know, we'd got together and written on a couple little ideas, just not for his band or my band, just kind of throw some ideas out. And so we knew, hey man, we could write good. So when it came time for them to start writing for the record, he called me and said, hey, you know, want to write some stuff for Skid Row. And so I put together some quick ideas, and we got together. I had the main riff, and got together, and me and him bashed out a good portion of the song, and then we brought Snake in, and he came up with some great ideas that took it to the final level. And so, yeah. But we wrote that one back in 2018, and I had forgotten about it, and none of us are really singers, so we were kind of just humming all the stuff that we thought it was going to go. And of course, as luck would have it, by the time it got recorded, it was with Eric Gronwald, who I'm a huge fan of. I mean, the guy just sings his buns off. Mm-hmm. So when I heard it, I mean it was way better song than I thought it was. You know, in my mind I was like, really, that's going to be the single?
And it ended up being the title track to the record.
And the title track of the record. Yeah, right. When he told me that, I hadn't heard it yet. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I was thinking, I don't remember it being that good of a song. But when I heard it, I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. It sounds great.
Yeah, and that's cool, too, because, I mean, I go back with the Skid Row guys since before they were signed, you know, being all Jersey guys and me being from Jersey. And in their history, they've not worked with a lot of outside writers. There's not a couple here and there, but not a lot. So.
Right. Well, once again, I mean, Rachel and Snake, they can pump the ideas out. They don't have any shortage of ideas, so they certainly didn't need me. But, you know, sometimes it's fun to get together with your buddies and write a song and, you know. So, and especially that there was no pressure on it, because we weren't like, oh, we need to write the single or something, you know, but it just turned out it was.
Yeah. You touched on yourself and Jacob producing and writing stuff for TV. I know Fred Corey does a lot of that, too. I know he's done stuff for movies, and he's been on the show talking about it. What have you done in that area? And is that something you really enjoy, doing that kind of work?
Well, so the guy that originally got me into it all, which I've written about 350 songs for TV now, was Mark Ferrari.
Oh, right. Because Mark had Master Source.
Exactly. So
wait, let me stop you there to fill people in on that, because that's a story. So Mark, who you know best as one of the guitar players from Keel back in the day.
And Cold Sweat.
And Cold Sweat. Mark started a company called Master Source, where he started placing music in... building this, will you take me through it? He built a bank of music that would be licensed.
At the time, they called them music libraries.
Right.
And now they call it production music. But yeah, and what essentially Mark did that set him apart from everybody else was he was the first guy to like record and put songs together that were good enough and recorded well enough to be on a record. Where before a lot of TV stuff and all, it was just elevator music and crap like that. And so he was like, hey, man, let's do full blown songs that would be good enough for albums. And, you know, and at the point where I ran into him, we put a song out. And I mean, it was like a week later and he'd already placed it three times. And I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool, you know. And a matter of fact, it was a song called Have a Drink on Me, and we had Mark Torian sing it. It sounded kind of like a Lynyrd Skynyrd kind of tune, and that it's placed a ton of times.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So where would we have maybe seen it placed?
Gosh, you know, if I'm not mistaken, that one was in like Pushing 10, the movie with Billy Bob Thornton.
Okay.
And, but I, you know, a lot of times I never hear until I get my statements. I mean, you know, our stuff gets used on all the TV shows, everything, you know.
So it's a bank. So for somebody listening that doesn't understand how that works. So say you're making a movie, TV show, whatever. And tell me if I'm wrong on this, but my understanding would be like, because I've heard this myself. Even if you watch a documentary, there's a reenactment. You need a song that kind of sounds like the song affiliated with that, but isn't, because they can't or don't want to clear it. You create a song that's similar but different enough.
Well, which is funny, because in the old days, they would give me, they call them seed tracks, and they're like, yeah, here's some stuff. We need some stuff that, like all these. And then after one of the lawsuits, I can't remember which one it was about, then they were like, okay, we need it kind of like this, but don't have it in the same key. Don't have a singer like that. Don't have it the same tempo. And I'm like, so write a different song that, you know, I'm like, then why am I trying to copy it, but make it sound totally different? Like, you know, so that became confusing. But, but it's fun, you know, they would just, or sometimes they would just go, hey, we need 13 Motown songs. Or five blues songs, or four pops, or sometimes they'd throw all that at me at once. And so I'd have to go muster up all these different kinds of singers, which that was fun. I met a lot of incredible singers, And I just started pumping them out all through the 90s. That's what I was doing, just writing tons of songs. And it was me and two other guys, Scott and Jamie, pumping out a lot of stuff for Mark. And then he'd have certain other writers for like his Christmas music and stuff like that. But we did a lot of the blues and pop and country and all that stuff. And then I also wrote, a lot of people don't know this, and it's actually really funny, but the theme song for Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, yeah.
My buddy had me do that. And then I've had, like, I had a single with a girl named Nami Amora in Japan that was, like, top 10. So, you know, it's fun. I just, you know.
Is doing the TV stuff and being a writer like that, is it lucrative?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, well, here's the deal. Because everyone in Nashville thought I was crazy. And depending on the deal, sometimes they want to take the publishing, give you the writer, but they'll pay you up front for the song. So I was getting paid up front and then giving the publishing away and keeping my writer. So anytime it played, I still made more money. And at the time, Mark was placing our stuff left and right. Now everybody's trying to get involved in it. And it's, you don't get as many placements, you don't make as much, and you don't get as much on the back end. And it's something that I'm not doing as much of anymore, but.
You said you were doing it during the 90s.
Yeah.
Now, as I think about that, we all know that for bands like Winger, the 90s were brutal.
We were dead in the water.
We couldn't get arrested. So was that a lifeline for you at that time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, in that time, I did do the Steve Perry record, and we did a three-month tour that was really awesome with Sass Jordan opening. And matter of fact, Taylor Hawkins was Sass's drummer.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely saved me because that was a long time we didn't have much going. And then it was finally, I think, 2002, Kip called me and he said, "Hey, I just got a call from Bret Michaels and Poison's going out and they're bringing Cinderella on the road." And he just said, "Hey, if you guys want to put the original Winger back together, we'd love to take you out." And we all decided to do it. And that's how me and Kip moved to Nashville, because I was in L.A., Kip was in Denver, Reb was in Pittsburgh, Rod was in Long Island. We're like, man, how are we going to do this? And our road manager, Rick, said, "Hey, you guys should all come to Nashville. I got a place to rehearse. I can put most of you up at the house. And then your first gig's in Tupelo, Mississippi. It's 100 miles. So we were like, that makes sense. So we all flew to Nashville. And while I was there for a couple weeks, I ended up writing a song with Jody Messina, the country artist. And I just, everybody I met, they're like, "Oh, you're a writer? Let's write, you know, tomorrow, now." I was like, really? So, yeah.
You know, when you think about it, and I've talked to Kip and Reb about this a billion times, but... And I've said it so many times, the 90s backlash to this scene was, look, I've been in the business over 40 years. It's the most brutal, crazy thing I ever saw, how abrupt it was, right?
It was very abrupt, yeah.
And we were, at
first, we were kind of taking it personally. Like, we were noticing, like, the things weren't selling and all that. And pretty soon, I remember one night I went and saw David Lee Roth with Cinderella and I think Extreme. And it was a place we'd played the year before, pretty much packed. And this time there was like 2,000 people. It was at Riverbend in Cincinnati. And I remember going, what's going on?
Right.
Like, so, yeah.
But where I was going with that was that Kit took the brunt of that in your band, at least, in Winger. Because obviously he's the front man.
Right.
He's the guy that the darts thrown at him. He's the guy, you know, he's the guy the band's named after. So he's getting crushed, right?
Yeah.
But even for somebody like you, who was not necessarily the front person of the band, you were still, I'm sure, because I've said this to the audience before, like, even in the industry, if you were an A&R guy that signed an 80s band, you were like, couldn't get a gig. If you were a photographer known for shooting, a producer known for producing, the gate came down on everyone.
Oh,
so even for you, the keyboardist brutal. In Winger, you probably had a hard time finding work, right?
I did. I would call BMI for trying to get them to help me get involved in stuff. I was calling producers or other, and no one would return my calls all of a sudden. And I remember thinking, wow, is this it? Am I over now? But then, like I say, you know, Mark started throwing work, you know, our way, and all of a sudden it was more and more and more stuff. And then he started subbing me out to other, he started meeting some other production companies. So I kept really busy all the way up until, you know, the last, I kind of mellowed out on that about 4 or 5 years ago. And of course now, you know, back doing shows with Winger and the whole Mick thing. And so
the moral of the story is Mark Ferrari was the savior of some of the 80s guys behind the scenes.
Trust me, I owe Mark big time. I mean, he totally kept me going for a good number of years. And I mean, I still reap the rewards of it because those songs are all they're out there in the system. So I still will be watching a show and all of a sudden there'll be this song and I'll be kind of going singing along with it. All of a sudden I'll go, oh my God, that's me, you know, because I forget it. I mean, it's a lot of songs, 350. I mean, so a lot of them are just goofy songs that I pumped out for him and I never listened to them again. But, you know,
and the moral of this is, you know, Mark was handsomely rewarded because he sold that whole company to, I think, Universal.
He sold it for a lot of money. He did very well for himself. And he should have, because you know what? Aside from it being his idea and all that, he worked his buns off. He was, you know, all day on the phones.
Yeah.
You know, I you know, and I'd see him like, you know, we went to a meeting one time and they were basically trying to shut him down and say no. And he just, it went right over his head. He just kept at him and kept at him. And I'm like, you know, I would have been like, okay, you know.
Yeah. No, I've known Mark forever. And I remember when he was doing it, he used to talk to me about it, but I'm not a writer. I'm not a musician. It went right over my head. He's like, I got this thing. And I was like, that's cool, Mark. Good luck to you. But I mean, I don't play a note of anything. I don't know. Yeah. There's nothing I can tell you about it. But he was, you know, when I saw everything that happened for him and we're still in touch, I mean, it was wonderful. It was really cool to see. You played with Kiefer's playing here tomorrow night. You were in Kiefer's band for a while, too, right?
I did the last 2 months of Cinderella, and then and then right at the end, Tom said, "Hey, I'm releasing my solo record, and you know, I'm gonna go that direction. And will you play keys?" And I said, "Of course." You know, Tom is a sweetheart of a guy, and so we threw that band together with, you know, Billy Mercer and Tony Higbee and Paulie and all them. So I did that for 4 years. And then Winger started getting busier and busier, and Kip's like, "Man, could you just please jump back in full time?" And so, yeah.
So that brings us full circle then to Winger, and you guys are playing here today on day one of Rock Island, and you've been out there.
What a lineup too: Wigwam, us, Mr. Big, and Night Ranger. It's a solid bill.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to see all those bands. So
yeah, and I mean, I think it's great that you guys have been active and doing stuff again. I tell people all the time, it's like, it was so criminally unfair that Winger took the brunt, really one of the biggest bands to get the backlash of the 80s. But in reality, nobody could argue one of the most talented. And to this day, it's all original guys. You
all
actually play
guys.
Live,
we
totally,
play every,
which is a big thing for me.
We sing everything, and sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not
but
so good.
But that's the way live
good.
Rock and roll is supposed to be. That's the whole point.
Yeah, no, the band, I'm, you know, feel blessed to play with these guys. I mean, obviously people like Reb and Rod, I mean, they're just, you know, and Kip is like a freak of nature.
Sure.
I mean, all his classical stuff, I listen to that. This fact he sits and programs that stuff in MIDI spins my brain. I've seen him, you know, get 3 nights of standing ovations at the Nashville Symphony Hall, and he's, you know, it's funny that the one guy that people used to go, "Oh, he doesn't even play his bass in the videos." And I'm like, trust me, he can play the bass. And, you know, he's one of the most talented guys I've worked with in the music business by a long shot.
Yeah, yeah. And this feels good for you to be you guys be back out here again. I mean, all the shows, I've seen you guys so many times. The shows are always great. The crowds seem to grow every year. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's just, I think people have a whole new appreciation for what you're doing and what you did.
Well,
and
I think we've redeemed ourselves finally. Well, you know,
everybody had those
videos in the day. We look back now and go, oh my God. You know?
Everybody did.
Yeah,
you guys weren't the only ones. That's the point. It's like, you got hit the hardest, but you could throw a dart and find any band from that era that was kind of, you know, that was the thing then. And I think too many people were listening with their eyes and not their ears.
Yeah.
You know, which was a big...
Hey, it's all good. I probably would have been one of them, you know, you never know. But I, you know, every time we play, somebody will come up and go, "Man, I've never seen you guys before. And now I'm like blown away," you know, so that's a good thing to hear, you know, that they're pleasantly surprised.
And what do you attribute the fact that Winger is pretty much the only band that I can think of pretty much from the 80s that has all original members?
Yeah,
plus one.
Yeah,
know?
Plus one.
Because when you
John
were gone,
Roth
John Roth came
in. Yeah, the new guy came
in. And they held
in,
on to him
he came
when
in
you came back.
Like, what, 30 years ago?
Right.
So, yeah, and we couldn't have gotten a better guy. John Roth, I mean, that guy's got a voice and a half, and he is the nicest guy.
Yes.
love him. So,
but what do you think that is? That of all these, like so many of these bands from the era of Winger are one original member, if that, not together anymore, whatever. You guys are the only ones that I can think of. Maybe a couple others.
There might be.
Poison is active. Those four.
Yeah, yeah,
they're another
yeah,
one. But
right.
Very, very few. That's the original band that
aren't suing each other.
So yeah, I mean, no, you guys all seem to be happy and getting along.
We have a blast.
It's very cool.
You know, we got Reb Beach with us, and he always just makes us laugh. So yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. last thing, and I'll let you go.
All right, man.
You are best known in Winger, at least, and every night that you guys play it, Kip gives you a mention for writing the song Miles Away.
Yeah.
Tell me about the origins of that song. And if I'm not mistaken, much of the writing in Winger at that point was Kip and Reb doing everything. So to have a song solely written by you and then for it to go on to become an enormous hit.
Right.
Tell me the story.
It's funny. I wrote that song actually about 6 years before I was actually playing with Eric Martin from Mr. Big at the time in his solo thing. And I just came up with that song in a day, and Eric sang the demo for me, and I didn't know how to record very well, so I've still got the demo of it. It sounds horrible, but Eric made it, you know, his performance on it was enough to convince everybody. Everyone was like, oh my God, that's a single, it's a single. I had this publishing company trying to sell it to Heart and all these people, but in the meantime, I met Kip, and he's like, oh my God, that's a great song. I want to, you know, the first record was kind of mostly together, and he said, man, we're definitely putting on the second record. So we did, and, you know, it became a single. So I'm really
big.
Lucky.
It was pretty high chart, too, wasn't it?
It was
top
like,
10 or something, wasn't it?
I don't
like
think,
across
no,
it, the board, top
it was,
40 hit?
It was top 20, I think. I can't even remember, but it did very well. And I'm lucky. And I'm lucky that I just happened to have Eric singing it because he sold it to everybody, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, he'll be here in a little bit
as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I told you that was the last thing, but another thing real quick. Steve Perry, you did that record, you did that tour. Are you still in touch with him at all?
You know, we haven't talked in a long time. We kept kind of, you know, and everybody just gets busy, and I just haven't called him in a long time. But, you know, it's good to see him finally putting some stuff out again, and because he was such a recluse for so long, and lately he's been pumping out different things and getting out and playing with some different bands, just, you know, getting up and singing with them. And so,
but very little, that's the thing that nobody can quite figure out, is that he doesn't really perform live, and we all know you got to go on the road if you're going to stand a chance in the business today.
Yeah, I don't know why, you know, I mean, obviously, well, first off, you know, if he was going to go out and try and sing the Journey songs, those things are so high.
Yeah.
When we toured in 96, you know, it was he was sounding really good, but we kind of geared the set where it started kind of lower and ramped where it kind of warmed him up as we went. But I mean, you know, there's one video floating around. It's us at the live at the Beacon Theater in New York, because Steve always had people taking people's cameras if they were filming, but one got out. And if you go listen to those, man, he was sounding great, and that band was just stellar. Moyes Lucas Jr. on drums, who played with Kenny Loggins, Diana Ross. He was with George Michaels on the Faith Tour. Lincoln Brewster, who's turned into an amazing Christian artist now. Incredible little young guitar player that Steve called Chicken Legs. I mean, he was literally 19 when he did the record.
Wow.
And then Todd Jensen, we brought in for bass.
Right.
Which, gotta love Todd. Me and Todd played with Steve and with Alice Cooper together. So,
you know, it reminded me when you're talking about Steve. So Steve Perry was on this show in studio with me 5-6 years ago when that record came out, when he was putting that record together, right, and it was coming out. And I... You know, first time I met him, wonderful guy. We had a great conversation.
Very nice
guy. And I said to him, because it was crazy, because while he was in studio with me, Neil Sean, who I know very well, was texting me and saying, tell Steve I said hello. And, you know, trying to extend the olive branch, whatever.
Yeah.
So I was showing Steve Perry the texts and whatever. So while all this is going on, you know, everybody's like, the big question is, will Steve Perry play live? Will he sing live? So I said to Steve on the air, I said, would you consider, you know, are you going to go out and play? I said, I'm not asking you if you will sing Journey songs. I'm asking you, can you still sing Journey songs? And he gave, you know, a little bit of a ballsy question, but I asked it in a nice way because of what you just said. I know how high they are.
Oh, my God.
And he gave a very honest answer on the air. He said, you know what? I could, but we'd have to tune way down.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what he said.
Oh, well,
so when everyone has all this mystery about why isn't Steve doing this or that, there's no shame in that. To me, the shame would be if he went out and lip synced. And,
right.
you know, I if you got to change it or you just don't want to do it at all, to me, that's way more respectful than going out there and singing to a tape.
Yeah.
So I understand it. I mean, nobody is the same now. You know, I'm 59. I'm not the same I was at 22,
Yeah, everybody, your vocal cords thicken as you get older, and it restricts you being able to hit the high notes. But, I mean, there are those freaks of nature like Mickey Thomas, you know, that's
Glenn
out
Hughes,
there singing.
Tyler.
Yeah, those guys, you know, you get the exceptions to the rule. But for a majority of them, it's like, wow, why did we write those melodies that were so high, you know? But
paint yourself into a corner.
But I mean, and there's probably a majority of the songs that he could sing and probably sound pretty good.
I think so.
But then you get into the stuff like Faithfully, where at the end it's through the stratosphere. And I mean, you know, so.
Right, right. Yeah, interesting. Well, man, you've had some amazing, you've been a part of so many cool things. And I'm glad you took some time today because.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I love getting those stories, you know, and I think the public doesn't hear from guys that fill that very important role that you do nearly enough. So I appreciate you coming by. And you said earlier, not a lot coming up for Winger this year. You guys are going to take it slow in 24, right?
Yeah, I mean, we are doing shows, but nothing close to what we did this last year. We played a lot of shows last year, which, you know, obviously, being our 35th year together and releasing the 7th record, we wanted to get out there. And this year will be a little bit more about everybody kind of getting into their own personal projects. But we'll still be playing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we'll keep an eye out there for you. I'm sure I'll see you out there at some gigs coming up.
All right,
Paul
appreciate
Taylor
it,
from Winger, everybody. Well, always love talking to those guys you don't get to hear from all that often. Paul Taylor working with Mick Mars on his coming new record. An original member of Winger. As a matter of fact, he wrote one of their biggest hits, Miles Away, as he talked about there. Great insights, great conversation, always fun to talk to the people you don't hear from all that much in these bands that we love. And I thank Paul for coming by, and of course, Brett Michaels joining me earlier. Hey, be sure to follow me on social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter or X, Instagram, Facebook page. Upcoming appearances, the 16th, I'm in Norco, California, at Rockstars of Tomorrow with Phil X, doing a speaking show. 17th, Long Beach, California, at the Gas Lamp, also doing a speaking show. If you're in those areas of the country, please come out and see me. And listen to the radio show, Trunk Nation, every day, Monday through Friday, live on Sirius XM Channel 103, Faction Talk, or anytime on the Sirius XM app if you're in the U.S. or Canada. The interviews you hear on this podcast originated live there. So again, you're only getting a tiny taste if you only listen to the podcast and can get the radio show. Come on board and join me again. SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk to sign up for 3 free months. No obligation, no credit card required. EddieTrunk.com is the website. Thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.